Okay.
There you go.
The tyranny of PowerPoint again. I'm going to be talking about a public health workforce development program that's jointly sponsored by the Medical College of Wisconsin and the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And this program is the Healthy Wisconsin Leadership Institute. It's really... Sorry, am I speaking too quietly? It's a program that's really attempting to change the way public health is being practiced in communities in Wisconsin. But before I start, I really wanted to give some thanks to my co-authors, two of whom are in the audience today, Peggy Orr, Kirsten Grubling, Peter Lade, and Patrick Remington. Let me see. I have no relevant financial relationships to disclose with respect to this presentation. So before I get started, I wanted to just give a little bit of context about the Leadership Institute in Wisconsin and sort of why it came to be. In response to calls both at the national and the state level for a change in the way public health is practiced, the Leadership Institute was formed. Some people call this kind of transformational program part of what we call the third revolution in public health. Sort of the first one being kind of hygiene strategies dealing with infectious disease issues, the second being individual behavior change approaches, and the third really a call for approaches that are much more transdisciplinary, population health centered, thinking broadly about the fundamental social and ecological economic determinants of health, more participatory and inclusive, and more intersectoral in design. Partners around the state in Wisconsin were really interested in seeing leadership development in the state that was more grounded in these types of approaches. So the question that we had about our program was, could we develop an applied continuing education program that would build these broad, diverse community partnerships that would then contribute to improvements in community health? So that's kind of the background and the basis for the program. Here's a kind of diagram of the social ecological model, which many of you are probably already familiar with. It really is fundamental to the programs that we're developing, and we try to use this as a guide post for our curriculum development. Also, I think it highlights the challenges of communities that are really trying to work across sectors and build partnerships that will effectively kind of get at all these different sectors that are determining health outcomes. So the program within the community, within the Leadership Institute that I'm going to talk about is primarily the Community Teams program. And the purpose of the program is to facilitate development of both public health skills and collaborative leadership skills in teams of individuals that are around the state working on mobilizing their communities to address areas of health priority. This is kind of just a visual schematic of what the program looks like. As you can see, it's a year-long program. We accept now up to 8 teams per year, and each of the teams has between 5 and 8 people participating in it. The teams are required in their application to indicate that they have members from multiple sectors, disciplines, and organizations. And we've purposefully incorporated these colors don't really distinguish themselves on this slide, but the workshops should be in green. And the orientation session and the technical assistance in between the workshops, as well as the distance learning, should all be in yellow. We really have tried hard to work in community with the teams, as well as provide them with opportunities outside of their community. So in the process of the skill building that they're doing in the workshops, they're then going back to their communities to apply those skills. And then we were supporting them with technical assistance. So while they're kind of dealing directly with the issues, they get technical assistance not only from program faculty, but also from outside experts. And we think it's really important that the teams have the time outside of their community to network amongst themselves, work away from their cell phones and their pagers and their bosses. And then when they're back in community, then we send them assistance directly to implement their projects and their programs. They also have access to distance modules throughout the year that they can use at any time that also supports some of the work and the skills they've been developing in the workshops. So to take a quick look at what kinds of groups and individuals are participating in the program, we kind of have just a random sample of folks that participated in 2008. And we're pretty happy with the fact that we're getting outside of traditional public health and we're getting business, we're getting non-public health governmental participants. We'd like to see a lot more participation from probably the business sector and from the governmental representatives that are not public health. But we have been really kind of stretching in the state what people consider the sort of concept of the public health workforce. So we've had school principals and local policymakers and representatives of the Parks Department. And that's been really good, both for the non-traditional and for the traditional partners to be working together. This is just a kind of quick look at who participates in terms of geographic region of the state. The blue, red, and green stars are the community teams participants. We've also had, in addition to geographic teams, we've had kind of interest teams. So there are statewide teams that focus on an issue rather than a geographic community. And we've had good participation across the state, with the exception of the northwest corner, which is usually the hardest probably to recruit from. And having participation from across Wisconsin has really made this very interesting. You have rural communities who might be working on partnerships and struggling to find enough people to represent different sectors and disciplines on their health issue. Whereas in a rural community, I mean an urban community like Milwaukee, you may be bumping into other organizations and coalitions that are working on the same issue, and you actually have to start negotiating how you collaborate when you have several partnerships working on an issue. It's sometimes determining whether you sit down at somebody else's table or you try to create another table to do your work. The curriculum for the program was really designed based on looking at some of the core public health competencies and then also looking at what were the areas of need in the state of Wisconsin. Both this Association of Schools of Public Health and the Council on Linkages have established competencies that we used, but we also tried to figure out what was going on in Wisconsin and where were their need, where was their weaknesses in community health, public health practice. So again, trying to think about these broad partnerships that are really necessary for this kind of third revolutionary public health practice, collaborative leadership skills are key. Team building, group facilitation and decision making, how you create a shared vision. You know, people talk about what is leadership and being able to collaboratively create a shared vision on changing health is really a key leadership skill. Building trust and how you share power and manage power dynamics. Anyone who's worked in any type of a partnership understands that that's really a difficult thing to do. We also work on basic public health skills, so understanding the social ecological model. How do you go out and find evidence once you're focusing in on a health priority? How do you find and navigate the evidence that's out there to find interventions that are going to have the broadest impact on your health issue? Social marketing and policy and project planning and evaluation skills are also things that were really not very well represented in communities yet. And then sustainability. So when teams are working on a health issue and developing partnerships around a health issue, what is it that they want to sustain about that after they're completing the program? And this is actually a picture of Tom Wolfe, who's written several books on coalition development. And he comes and he works with the teams on trying to help them define what it is they want to sustain about their work and how are they going to do that. And funding and grantsmanship is one piece of that. It's certainly not the whole picture. Again, a lot of work on how you build partnerships and coalitions, what types of partnerships are there and which ones are appropriate for the kind of work you're doing. And then anyone who's really trying to do broad program and policy change at the community level really needs to understand how to do media advocacy, communicate well with policymakers, and have solid public speaking skills. So we try to give practice to our team members in doing this. Here's a local public radio reporter interviewing one of the participants who's just getting some practice at doing that. And then what kinds of issues, what kinds of health issues are the teams addressing? Almost all of these are complex public health issues that have been identified in the state health plan as being important in Wisconsin communities. So they're doing everything from substance abuse to immigrant health, risky sexual behavior, injury, access to cancer care issues. And the program is early in its inception. We've only been in the field for 3 years and are just really beginning to do some evaluation work. We collect kind of program improvement data, but looking at communities that have gone through the program, what happens to them at the end of the program, what happens to them a year later, talking to other community members is part of what we'll be doing in subsequent follow-up. But from what we hear now from the participants and from other and some of their community members, we've seen that they have built stronger partnerships. They're getting, almost all of them, I think, to a team have gotten grants funded at the end of this program. So they're having some success, at least in sustaining funding for their programs. Media coverage of their health issues has increased. They're communicating and engaging more with legislators. There's improved data collection. One of our teams was successful in getting both the youth risk behavior survey and the behavioral risk factor survey questions added related to the LGBTQ population in Wisconsin, which we didn't have before. So we consider that a real asset to the state as a whole. And they're also implementing policies and programs, which we hope will have lasting impact in their communities. They're doing worksite farmers markets, the walking school bus, and then some teams have worked on increasing utilization of prevention services. Here's just some examples. You have some of the farmers market work and some coverage of that, and then I think this is like one piece of a walking school bus. There's, I don't know if the, I didn't look on the program to see if there was anything about this at this meeting, but I read several articles about the walking school bus, and they're doing some interesting follow-up to look at not only, you know, sort of just immediate physical activity increases for young kids, but also their perceptions of their community, safety in their community, community cohesion. So there's some interesting thing coming out of this particular intervention. Finally, we looked and have spoken to the teams about their perception of the program and heard, for example, that after going through the program, they felt really set up to be applying for and receiving funding. This is the team from Milwaukee that was working on risky sexual behavior. And also that they're perceiving a benefit in this kind of branching out beyond their own organizations and working with other community organizations. This was a particularly gratifying case because this is a school principal who it took her most of the program year to admit that she was actually part of the public health workforce. She kept telling us, no, I'm just a school principal. Public health isn't really what I do. So she's become a real strong advocate for the program. So in conclusion, we seem to be having some success here with a promising model for building partnerships that can actually impact on community health. The community team's participants have been able to sort of broadly conceive of their health issues, engage the evidence in understanding where you're going to actually have an impact on the issue, and then really build progressive partnerships that can actually change. Future challenges for the program, we'd like to see even broader representation. Who sits around the table to work on public health issues should probably be including engineers and urban planners and other folks that we don't always invite to our tables. Sustaining and disseminating their initiatives and taking the work that they do in that year and like branching out from that, you know, in the year that they're in the program, they may do sort of step one and two of a larger plan to address their health priority. So we'd love to see them going even further than what they've done in the program. And that is something that we'll be following up with as the program matures. And finally, just broadly, I think both in the state and nationally, if we're going to be doing these kind of third revolutionary public health approaches, funding and programmatic design really need to reflect that. And I think right now we're not really adequately supporting what it takes to do these kinds of partnerships and to do them successfully. Finally, I just want to acknowledge the two medical schools in Wisconsin for their support of the program. Thank you very much.
It doesn't have the videos that I need on it. There we go. Thank you. Hello, so my name is Angela Caron, and I'm with Kaiser Permanente Southern California Region. I'm going to talk to you today about how we organize our community benefit work and why we do that community benefit work and what we're trying to achieve in the community. I want to acknowledge Cody Rudaflores, who's here with us from Community Benefit and really creates the vision for much of our safety network. Patricia, who guides our grant making, and Sonia and Catherine, who are here on staff and also doing tremendous work around our community benefit activities. I have no relationships to disclose. I'm going to start off with a short video, which is you might have seen on TV. It's part of not of our community benefit work, but part of our brand work for Kaiser Permanente.
My heart beats only for you.
Our mission at Kaiser Permanente is to provide affordable and high-quality healthcare services, both to improve the health of our members and also to improve the health of our communities. And the community benefit work is that latter part of the mission statement, which is to really work in communities. This was something when I joined Kaiser Permanente 3.5 years ago that I wasn't very familiar with, and I find that it's still kind of a well-kept secret both within Kaiser Permanente and outside of the community that Kaiser is there not just for our members but in working in close partnership with communities. This shows you our organization and where we are located. Most of our membership, over 3 million members each in Northern California and Southern California, with a total membership base of over 8 million people throughout the country. We were founded in 1945. We're the largest private nonprofit health plan in the country. Nationally, we have 32 medical centers, 11 of them in Southern California, and 421 medical offices. What this means for us is that we're in a lot of communities. We're a large part of the footprint in terms of healthcare in a community. And in some communities, between us and the safety net providers, we take care of a very large percentage of the population in a given community. Our partnerships with community are really based on a partnership model. It is grant making to some extent. We do provide in Southern California about $16 million to $20 million worth in grants to our community partners. But the grants are a way of supporting the community agencies in doing their work. But it's based on listening to what their needs are, looking at where we have some synergies and what kind of work we can do together. We believe that good health care and access to health care is really a fundamental right for all people, and continue to work on universal access. And until then, really the safety net, community clinics, public hospitals, and public health departments play such a vital role in providing care for communities that that's where our focus has been. Our work is based both on a local strategy and a national strategy. We do local community needs assessments. Those inform the overall work. And our national strategy is divided into what we call four streams of work. Having both an overall national focus with specific goals that we have, as well as being able to be responsive at the local level, makes the work more vibrant and alive. Our streams of work include our community health initiatives, which for the most part is our healthy eating, active living. And that includes looking at how to make the healthy choice the good choice for people, both in terms of access to healthy foods in communities, many of which are food deserts, particularly, for example, in South LA, where you can easily find fast food restaurants. There's only one full-service supermarket, and there's only one sit-down restaurant in the entire community, lots of liquor stores, and trying to find good nutritional food within walking distance of your home is very difficult. And one of the things that we did there, joining with other members of the community and foundations, was help to start a farmer's market. Our safety net partnerships is really the heart of the work that we do with our community clinic partners. For care and coverage, we do something fairly unique. As a health plan, we offer coverage for children and for adults, primarily for children. We have about 35,000 children in Southern California that we make Kaiser Permanente members, full members. We purchase dental coverage for them. They have access to vision care, and their parents pay us $8 per month for that coverage. And that's for children that don't qualify for either of the state-funded government programs, the SCHIP program and the Medicaid programs in California. The other part of the work is developing and disseminating knowledge. And at Kaiser Permanente, our community benefit department supports the research work, supports our residency program, for which we have about, in Southern California, 500 residents that go through the program each year. And most of our funding is allocated into these four primary areas. 75% of it, of our activities, are focused on this. We have another 25% that we can allocate to new and emerging needs, most recently an oral health initiative that we have started. I was talking about the Watts Farmers Market in this video. Talks a little bit about that.
The Watts Healthy Farmers Market is a huge step toward improving the health and nutrition of people living in South Los Angeles. A grant from Kaiser Permanente will help support the new weekly market.
This community has the highest percentage of diabetes and stroke in LA County, as well as heart disease. We want to help them to see the value in investing in fresh, good food that's well prepared and that's prepared in a low calorie manner.
If you look around this community, there is only one full-service supermarket serving all of Watts. Even in that market, the variety and the selection and the quality of the produce is not very good when you compare it with other communities. What we thought we would bring with this market is not only fresh fruits and vegetables, but also a way to bring health-related information and get people to thinking healthy.
So if you've had a chance to stop by our Kaiser Permanente booth in the exhibit hall, you've probably had a chance to pick up one of the market bags. We provide those in our farmers market to encourage people to shop locally and to have reusable bags instead of paper and plastic. Our community benefit work is really done at the local level. I talked about it being more than just grant making, and really what we do is share our internal resources. We've made available to our community clinic partners, for example, our nurse practitioner protocols. Each community clinic needs to develop their own. We are constantly updating ours, including the latest information available, and we freely share those with our community clinics so they can take them and adapt them to their use instead of having to have to do research each one individually for the latest information. We do the same with our health education materials. We make all of those available, and people can order those for free or get on a DVD a copy of the information, adapt it to their use, put their own logo on it, and use it as health education materials. Our medical residents actually practice out in the community clinics. We have them do rotations, and for many of the community clinics, they've come to rely on the medical residents supervised by our doctors as part of the care delivery. So if they're there one day a week providing care, they know that they can count on that and schedule patients to come in on a regular basis. With our community clinic partnership, we've been able to expand access to care that is available through the community clinics. We've also partnering with them to look at issues of quality and increasing the quality through a variety of different methods. And Cody just had a poster session on our BCCQ, building capacity for building community clinic capacity for quality, an initiative that we've done jointly with another foundation. Most of the clinics are wanting to have electronic health records available, and some of them have actually gone down this path, some successfully and some not so. So what we did was work with the clinics, work with other funders, and look at what does it take to be able to successfully implement EHR, and what are the best aspects of that work? What can we do together to make it as successful as possible? One of the things that we found is that those clinics that are already utilizing disease registries are able to be much more successful in their work. So we've embarked on a project with other funders of ensuring that all clinics have disease registries available to them, that they're utilizing them, and kind of building that muscle for using the IT in that way as a stepping stone towards being able to implement EHR. In addition to our residents, we have much of our staff that volunteer in community clinics. Through that work and the partnerships with the clinics, what they've been telling us in the last couple of years is the resources that they've gotten and the work that they're doing in primary care is really excellent, but where they really have identified a tremendous need is when they need to get someone in to see a specialist, and the difficulty in accessing specialty care services. Our county hospitals that are the ones that provide a lot of the specialty care often have 6-month waits, and in one county, they actually stopped taking referrals because it was taking a year before people could get in and see specialists. So we've designed an initiative in partnership with our Northern California partners and invited another foundation, the California Healthcare Foundation, to cover other parts of the state in looking at putting together specialty care collaboratives where communities come together, community clinics, private providers, nonprofit hospitals, and the public hospitals, in looking at what are the highest needs for specialty care and what are the models that they can implement in their communities. We funded 11 collaboratives in Southern California, and we are now at the implementation phase of that, where they are taking a look at the models that they have come up with. Some of them are looking at expanding the scope of practice for the providers within the community clinics. Others are looking at e-referral mechanisms so that patients can go from the community clinic setting into a specialist in a short time frame, go in with all of their medical records and labs and not have to have things repeated, and then be able to go back to their medical home at a community clinic. In another instance, is actually developing specialty care referrals where they didn't have them before, including such practices as a traveling specialist where a clinic might bring on a dermatologist or other specialist who will come in and spend time in a variety of different clinics, understands the community, gets to know what the needs are, and is able to really adapt that practice to meet the individual needs in those community settings. The partnerships have been really promising and wonderful, but have also we've also faced some challenges in implementing and forming those partnerships. Oftentimes, we find that we speak different languages, and not Spanish and English, but in terms of the care setting, in a private practice versus a community setting versus a hospital setting, and really getting to understand how each of us works. What our organizational culture is, how do we overcome some of the ingrained ways that we do business and really listen to each other and the way that we do work. One of the things that we had to overcome in sharing our nurse practitioner protocols, for example, is the amount of investment that our medical staff had in creating those and updating those, some concern that it would fall into the hands of competitors, and a reluctance in some cases to share some of that material. And it really takes building some of those relationships, working together, understanding what the needs are of the community in order to be able to really listen and take care of and address what the community is saying are their biggest needs. Some of the things that we have done recently is really bring together the State Association for Public Hospitals with the State Association of Primary Care Providers in working together in ways that we haven't before. And at sometimes are on different sides of an issue on a legislative agenda, and yet finding where our common ground is, where we can come together, and where we can actually move the agenda for the benefit of community and the patients that we have in common. I think some of the strengths of the partnership model that we've been able to find is really enriching each other in terms of bringing additional expertise that doesn't exist in one organization to the others, and some opportunities for learning beyond what we'd be able to have, and in some cases some surprising things for us. I'll show you a video on our ALL program, and that'll talk a little bit about that.
Diabetes is an epidemic in the United States. For Kaiser Permanente to translate our practice with regards to reducing cardiovascular risk, death, to those diabetic patients as a national agenda item was a real opportunity. ALL really has the opportunity to reduce cardiovascular death by 55%.
So the ALL program has been very successful in our community clinic patients. We have been able to get a near 100% rate of compliance. By implementing ALL, we haven't just improved the compliance with aspirin, statin, and ACE inhibitors in our diabetic patients. We've improved what their LDL number is. We've improved what their blood pressure is. We've improved the number of patients with self-management goals. We've really been able to comprehensively improve diabetes care that this grant helped us start. We called all of the patients that we thought would be appropriate for the program. The Hispanic patients were so pleased that we were calling their house, thinking of them and concerned about their life, and had a program for them that Kaiser sponsored to help prevent a heart attack or stroke. So they were so honored that we were thinking of them and calling them.
The fact that they've been so successful enables us to look at their methods and their approaches and transfer that to the improvement of care for our own members.
And that's really, I think, a key takeaway for our partnership. We entered the ALL work in looking at reducing the rate of cardiovascular disease in diabetic patients 55 and over in communities by sharing our protocols, by working with communities and looking at how they could adopt those protocols. We're in the midst of an evaluation phase to see, can we move the needle in a community where Kaiser Permanente has a lot of members, where the community clinics, public hospitals are implementing the AL protocols in that community? Can we change the incidence of cardiovascular disease in people with diabetes 55 and over in a measurable way? One of the things that we didn't expect to find was that the community clinics did a better job than we did in terms of adherence to the protocols. And that's something that we're really looking at and seeing what can we learn from our community partners in that arena, in an arena where, frankly, we thought we had some very particular expertise in, and are finding that they did a better job with the monolingual Spanish-speaking patients than what we were doing with our own member population. And how can we translate what they are doing and incorporate some of that practice into our own practice and improve the delivery of our own care? And that's really an exciting piece, where more and more, how can we have this be a two-way relationship in terms of partnership and learning with each other and really making a significant difference for a community, more than what we had anticipated when we started on this path. So what's next for us is continuing to build on that community clinic partnership, really moving into a different phase of evaluation with it than what we had in the past, in taking a look prospectively, the review that we have done in bringing consultants on board to evaluate us, to look at what did we do in the past and what's that been work, how did that work? Evaluation was not a really strong component of our partnership work initially, and yet that's a component that we've identified as really important in our work, so that we are investing our resources, both financial as well as our staff, as well as our health education materials, et cetera, in a way that really makes a big difference for our communities. And it's through that evaluation mechanism that we're hoping to really inform the rest of our work as we move forward. And I think that we will be taking questions at the end. Here's my contact information.